Welcome to The Clever Cookster, where we talk every week with different chefs, cookbook authors, and food and drink professionals. I'm your host, Kara Rhoda. We're here today with Richard Betts, the author of the New York Times bestseller, The Essential Scratch and Sniff Guide to Becoming a Wine Expert, and now the author of a new book, The Essential Scratch and Sniff Guide to Becoming a Whiskey Know-It-All. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
So what I love about these books is that they're taking something that is kind of intimidating for people, learning about a complicated subject and presenting it in a really fun and accessible way, but still with so much useful information. How did you come up with the scratch and sniff format?
Well, a couple ways. There are a couple key pieces. The first is just that desire to take things that are hard, you know, or that we don't have... they aren't part of the American vernacular, particularly wine, right? And more wine is drunk here every day, but we don't have the same traditions that they do in Europe, where hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years of traditions of drinking wine, and it has its place on the table. It's that grocery, right? And here, wine first was the province of the wealthy or the privileged or what have you, but I'm a big believer that if we do treat it as a grocery, then it really helps people better their lives. I mean, just you live a better existence. And that's my ambition, is to help people do that. So when thinking about how to do that, we didn't say, okay, well, how do we figure out a book that lets you do that? That wasn't the thought process at all. I was with a friend heli skiing, and at the end of a very, very long day, we had drunk a whole bunch of wine and everyone else had gone to bed. Chris said, "Hey man, how this tasting we just did, how do we scale that? How do we get you out to so many more people than these little dinners we have of six or eight people?" He said, "Maybe a book." And I was like, "Yeah, but so many wine books are, they're thick, fussy, intimidating tomes that definitely have a place, but I don't think that furthers my goal. I don't know that I have anything to add to that." And then the scratch and sniff idea was posited, and we both looked at each other and wow, that's actually a great idea. And so I went to work on it, and it was really that easy. One of the things that makes it easy is that wine and now whiskey can both be deconstructed into their component pieces very, very easily, right? You can say what makes whiskey or wine what it is. And in the case of wine, it's the grape, it's the place, and it's what you age it in. Right. And with whiskey, what makes a whiskey? It's the grain as opposed to a grape. It's the barrel that you age it in. And it's a place where you age that barrel. Those are the three factors that make it exactly what it is. And so if you dissect those things and you show them to people and say, "Hey, this is why this tastes like this. This is why it tastes like that." You can then decide, I don't like that very much and I'm going to avoid that. Or, I like this, this, and this piece. And then you can put them back together. You understand what you like, why you like it, and therefore what to drink.
So how do you figure out what you like in a whiskey? What's the cheat sheet of factors and different things that you're looking for? We hear these adjectives like peaty and smoky, but what do those really mean, and how can you decide what you like or don't like about them?
Well, that's the beauty of the scratch and sniff thing, right? So we have all of those scents in the book. And then it's up to you, right? You just scratch it, put your nose to the page, and decide whether it works for you or not. In the end, once you've done that, you say, okay, I liked the peaty thing, and I really liked the malty thing, that kind of vanilla milkshake piece. And I like the dried fruit piece. That smelled really good to me too. And then you can go to the back where we've created the whiskey, basically whiskey wheel. And it's really a map to your desires. So you start in the middle, as good maps do, and you move outwards and you make choices along the way. So, I like the malty thing, and then I like the dried fruit thing, and I'm really good with the peaty oceanic seaside thing. Then that's going to lead you directly to the Scottish Isles as the place for your whiskey. Then within that, you can say, I want to start with something really, really mellow, something like Scapa, or you can go... It's graded on the outside of the wheel. We list almost 300 different types of whiskey. And if you, in each of the sections, if you go to the right, it just gets more and more serious, meaning it asks more of you as a drinker. And so, you know, I think that the Scotch Ale starts with something like Scapa, which is very, very easy and mellow, but it exhibits all of those things that you liked when you scratched and sniffed, all the way up to something like Lafroy, which is, you know, has all those elements, but just the volume is turned all the way up. It requires a lot of you. But, you know, it's super easy to use. And ultimately, you know, if you're true to what you smelled and liked, then this will serve you very, very well.
One of the rewards, I think, of learning more about wine is then having the ability to buy a bottle that is in that sort of sweet spot of affordable everyday drinking wine, but is really good for the value. Is there an equivalence in whiskey? You know, does it really get better the more you're willing to pay, or is it possible to find those options that are in the sweet spot that are really great value, really affordable, and can really suit your taste?
Absolutely. I mean, there are two rules that apply to both whiskey and wine. I mean, I'm sure it's more than that, but you know, particular to your question, older is not necessarily better, and more expensive is not necessarily better. You know, they're collectors, just like in anything, and supply and demand drives prices up, and perceived scarcity drives prices up. And so, you know, if you don't feel like you want to play in that, you can absolutely do really, really well if you just do a little bit of research. And in fact, when we tasted all those whiskeys that I described, you know, for the book, we tasted almost 500. 300 of them made it on the wheel in the back of the book. But we did it blind, meaning we had no idea what was in the glass other than we would put them in groups like, okay, this is a rye group, and this is a bourbon group, and this is a Canadian group. And taste these things objectively with a set of criteria, like, okay, you know, how do these things behave relative to one another? And at the far end, you know, where I said in each of these categories, it requires more of you. That generally means, you know, the whiskeys are more complex or they have more to say. And you'll find some whiskeys in that scale that are actually quite expensive. And right next to them, you'll find some whiskeys that are actually, you know, maybe a tenth of the price, which that's pretty cool, you know? So it's definitely out there to be found, and the book helps you discover that.
Let's talk a bit about pairing. When you're either using whiskey in a mixed drink or pairing it with food, what are some of the things to keep in mind?
That's a great question. If it's a mixed drink, it's what else you're adding to it. You know, that's always a big deal. I'm less, inclined to do that. I just feel like you add so many other variables, including temperature, including sweetness, acidity, so on and so forth. Whereas the whiskeys themselves, maybe with just a drop of water or a small piece of ice, can be so interesting. And then you really do have the opportunity for synergy. You know, it doesn't get confused with too many players. So, you know, there's some surprising things like scotch tends to go really well with raw oysters. Who knew, right? Except the oysters have this briny, salty thing, and so do some of the scotches that are aged by the ocean. So that works really well. And, you know, bourbon from the middle of our country and aged in these big warm rick houses, warehouses, that takes on something very, very rich and round and has almost a cherry quality of its own, can pair with bigger, richer, sweeter foods. So it's almost, you know, that those maybe weren't intuitive before I started thinking about them, but when you say, yeah, of course, size like size and salt like salt. So it's out there. It's out there to play with. And for me, I think the biggest surprise in doing all this is to see how easy it actually can be to pair whiskeys with food. You know, coming to this as originally a wine guy, I was like, oh no, it's wine with food. No, it was a real pleasant surprise to try so many cool whiskeys with so much good food.
Fantastic. Well, this is so informative. Thank you so much for sharing these tips and tricks with us.
Kara, thank you. I appreciate it.
Check out Richard's new book, The Essential Scratch and Sniff Guide to Becoming a Whiskey Know-It-All, and join us next time on The Clever Cookster for more tips and tricks from the kitchens of the world's best cooks.